Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach David Bartke here. Today is Sunday, March the 11th, 2018, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And I have to confess, I actually was starting a couple minutes early because fortunately Dave was on top of things. I was in the middle of editing the book that has been kind of hanging around for a while. I haven't been able to do much with it lately, and I finally got into a groove this morning, David. And I lost track of the time. It wasn't a change of time. It wasn't because of springing forward. It's just because I was just engrossed in doing the editing. So I apologize. Thanks for contacting me to get this thing going.
Yeah, no problem. I had thought maybe you forgot there was a time change. So I was like,
I better
call him.
We actually took care of the clocks first thing when we woke up. That wasn't it. No, it's just that, there'd been a lot lately. I've told the story a number of times about how the computer had been giving me problems for so long, and we finally got a new one.
Yeah.
But as a result of all that, I had this big backlog of work that I was trying to work through, and I finally got through it this week. But come Friday, I was like wiped out. I didn't really get a whole lot done in the book then. So it had been like 2.5 weeks since I had last edited any part of the book. And I did a little bit yesterday, not a whole lot, but I woke up this morning and I finally got in that groove in that great place, you know? And I just started working, and, you know, I was looking at, last time I looked at the clock, oh, it's 9 o'clock, no problem. Went work. All of a sudden you call me, it's 11 o'clock. Whoa, what happened?
Now, for those who don't know, what book are you talking about?
This is the book, yeah. This is the book that we have a whole bunch, almost 40 people contributing to, most of whom are life coaches like David. And it's a book of manifestation stories, law of attraction manifestation stories. That's one of the reasons I was so engrossed, because they're good stories, David. I mean, I've had to do some cleaning up of writing and so forth, but the stories themselves are really good stories, quite engrossing. So it's not terribly surprising that I kind of lost track of what I was doing, but nevertheless, there it is. So anyway, we're here. We're getting going. How are you doing today? Have you had a good week?
Yeah, it was a little bizarre because in my area we had a really big snowstorm.
Yeah, we did too.
And as a result, we lost our power for a few days.
Ooh, so, dear.
Yeah, so it was a little bit unnerving, and then of course it was cold. But the win in it is that fortunately my family doesn't live that far from me, so and they didn't lose their power. It's not weird, like the same town, but our street and neighboring streets lost their power, but they didn't lose their power. So we were able to go there in a nice warm house.
Well, that's good. Yeah, and especially this time of year, you want a warm house, no doubt about that.
Yes, yeah, so we were able to do that, and all our food was okay, like nothing, you know, because we didn't open the fridge or freezer during that time, so everything was okay, which was really good.
Plus it was cold, so it was going to keep it cold anyway.
that is true. And the person that was supposed to plow our driveway never showed up.
Oh, dear.
And I just know, you know, as you know, I didn't go into panic mode because I knew that would not serve me in any way.
Nope.
And I just told myself, well, I'm sure I can easily find someone else who could come and do it. Because we couldn't get our car out until our driveway was plowed. You know?
Ah, yes.
It was very simple. I just went online, put in my zip code for a snow plower, and first person I called, he goes, oh, I'm going to be in your town in an hour. I'm like, okay, well, come by and let me know what you think. So he did. He came by, and we agreed on a price, and boom, it was done. So
outstanding. Boy, that's not easy to do in a snowstorm because everybody's all pretty much booked up, especially if it's a deep one like this one was. So that one. Yeah.
Yes, and I could have got into, like, the person that totally flaked, I could have gone in a very low vibration and taken on all that frustration, like, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought to myself, no, that is not going to help me vibrationally or any other way, and it's not going to get me closer to getting someone here to do it. So I just said to myself, well, okay, I'll find someone else, and it'll be easy, and they'll come and they'll do it. And that's exactly what happened. So,
well, it's funny that you mentioned that you lost. I mean, I'm not saying it's funny that you lost power. Don't get me wrong. But it's funny that you mentioned a story about losing power, because the day of that same storm, I was thinking about, you know, this is a really heavy snow that's coming down on here, and this is the kind of thing that could really lead to us losing power. And, you know, within a moment of me thinking that, the lights started to flicker.
Are you serious?
And I said to myself, okay, message received, I'm sorry. And I turned it around, and I spent the next 5 minutes just imagining how wonderful it was to have the lights on, to have the power on, and to be warm in our home and so forth. And the lights just stayed on the rest of the time. That was funny.
So how much did you actually get? I think we got about, oh my goodness, about 16, 17 inches.
Yeah, we didn't get quite that much. We only had about 8 or 9 inches. The really strange thing, David, was we got, I think we had 8 or 9 inches. It may have even been 10 or 11. But it was a warm day, and by the end of the day, it was down to about 1 or 2 inches. It all melted.
Oh, wow, you're lucky.
It was just unbelievable. I'd never seen anything like that before. I mean, where literally you get that much snow, and then hours later, it's gone. That was amazing.
That's better than it staying around.
I mean, I almost wished I just kind of left the car where it was and let the snow melt away because I didn't have to go shovel it out, right?
That's right.
Well, unfortunately, it doesn't work that way, but nevertheless, that would have been cool. I also had a really weird experience yesterday. I mentioned how I had done a little bit of editing, but I also wasn't really feeling up to doing much of anything. It had been kind of a tough week in terms of having a lot of work to do and so forth. I just needed to kind of sit back, you know, and just kind of relax.
Yeah.
So one of the things I like to do is I like to play online poker. And, you know, these days I can only play online poker with play chips, which is fine. I used to play for money and I used to make money, which was nice. But
that's nice. Yeah.
But nevertheless, I got into the game. And I have in the past tried to apply law of attraction teaching to it, but never successfully.
Right.
Well, I couldn't say never, but certainly with not consistency, you know. And I would try different ways of applying it and so forth. And you know, there'd be times where I thought maybe I was getting results, but then no, it wasn't really working well. And, you know, the results just weren't very consistent. Well, I don't know what happened yesterday, but somehow I changed my perspective. Because what I had previously tried to do is I would try to, you know, influence, okay, here I'm going to get a certain card so I can get an ideal hand to, you know, take a bunch of chips away from somebody or, you know, something like that. And I realized, no, that's too micromanaging. For some reason, it came to me that I should stop micromanaging that way and let the universe have time to deliver what I really wanted. So what I really want? Well, I had to make it more general than that. I couldn't say, well, I just want a big hand right now. I had to give it more time, so to speak. I had to give it a bigger realm to work within. And if I did that, then the universe, I figured, might be able to deliver what I wanted. So I decided, I like to play tournaments. And typically the tournaments I play in will get anywhere from like 50 to 500 to 1,000 people, depending on, you know, the buy-in and so forth. And this was a 50,000 chip tournament, which is actually relatively small. 50,000 chip buy-in. But I mean, I have like 70 million chips, so I didn't really care. I've done well over the years, let's put it that way. But anyway, so I bought it into the tournament and started playing. And actually, I played in a couple tournaments, and they were both doing rather poorly. I was doing poorly in them. And I said, okay, here's a chance for me, because I'm not doing very well, so I might as well just try applying some LOA, right? So how can I make this more general? I said, I know what I'll do. Ultimately, in a tournament, you want to keep doubling up your chips. If you can keep doing that, not only do you stay alive, but you actually get a chance to win the tournament. You know, that's really what the goal is, right? So I, you know, at the time, I think both tournaments I started with 1,500 chips, and I was down to about half that amount, 700 or 800. And I said, all right, well, let's give this a shot. So I just want the universe to double my chip. Okay, so I played a few hands, and you know, within a few hands, I doubled my chips on both games. I said, well, that's pretty cool.
Wow,
I wonder if I can do it again. So I said, okay, well, let's go for 3,000 chips. And I did it to 3,000 in both games. And I kept doing this, and there were ups and downs. There were peaks and valleys. But slowly, I was moving myself up in the ranks just by saying, I'm going to double my chips. And I wasn't just saying double my chips. I was also getting excited about it because I knew how important the feeling part was.
The feeling component, yeah.
Yeah. So I said, boy, I mean, it's just going to be so great. If I could double both of those, that would be fantastic. I would feel great. I started to get a smile on my face. I started to feel it inside and so forth. And sure enough, within a few hands, it was happening in both of those cases. And I thought, well, this is really cool. And I kept doing it for a while. Then one of the games, I made a really dumb mistake and ended up getting knocked out of the game. But the other game I was doing really well. And so I just kept going with it and kept going with it and kept going with it. And David, poker is a game. It's kind of like any other kind of gambling or whatever. I mean, yes, there's a tremendous skill level involved, and that's why I do well.
Right.
But there's also a luck factor. So you could be in a hand where you compare your hand to the other guy's hand, and it's clear you have a huge advantage. I mean, you're going to win four out of five times. But that means you can lose one out of five times. You know, and that would happen. You know, often lately had been happening where I was on top, and I ended up being the loser because the luck had turned out badly for me. Well, here I was getting exactly the opposite result, because not only was I getting good hands and winning them, I was getting hands where I was being dominated by somebody else's hand, and I'd get the best card anyway, and I'd still win. And I was thinking, this is really great. I'm liking this. Well, I'm turning it into a long story, so let me try shortening it. The bottom line is that I kept increasing my chips incrementally every time, looking to double and double and double and double and double, until finally I was at the last table, and I had one of the smallest stacks of chips. But I didn't care. Yeah. This was working great. I mean, I had come from nowhere, and I was still in the tournament with, like, the last nine players in the tournament. I figured that's an accomplishment all by itself. But I wasn't done. I said, let's win this thing. This will be great. You know, who knows what will happen. And so I just kept doing the same thing. Okay, I got 100,000 chips now. I want 200,000. And a few hands later, I was at 200,000. This is great. Okay, I got 200,000. I won't even be greedy. I just want 300,000. I'd get 300,000. It's like, this is fantastic. Then I would say, okay, well, I'll go for 500,000. Okay, I got 500,000. Oh, my God. It was that kind of a thing. Then I started to get a little egotistical. I said, well, I'm going to start dominating this thing. Within five hands, I had half my chip total. It was like, okay, got the message. Went back to the old routine, started talking about, okay, I just love the idea of building up the chips. I don't care how it happens. I'm not going to be trying to dominate. I'm just going to let the table do its thing. I won the tournament, David.
Wow.
I won it flat out. And every single the best part was when I was head-to-head with the last guy. I had about 600,000. He had about 400,000. And I had the first play. I raised him. I was holding a king nine, which is not a really great hand. It's like, okay, it's good for head-to-head, but it's not really a strong hand. Turned out he had a queen seven. So I raised him. He called, and the table flopped king, king, seven. That's a three of a kind for me, which is a really good hand, and he had a low pair, two sevens. But the thing is, when you play poker and you're head-to-head, if you get anything, you're in a really good shape to bet it. And so he went all in with his sevens.
Wow.
And here I'm sitting there with three kings. I'm thinking, you got to be kidding. I called. I won the tournament. I was like, I can't believe this. I stuck with it for the first time. That is the first time I've ever played a tournament where I just stuck with my belief and stuck with not trying to manipulate, not trying to micromanage how the whole thing worked. And it just flowed.
Right, right. Isn't that nice?
It was really nice. So I just had to tell you that story, especially after all the money you've won at the casino. I mean, I had to do something to catch up.
Oh, my goodness. That's great.
Now, am I ready to do that in a casino? Absolutely not. I got to prove it to myself by doing it a number of times. But the fact that I did it once was, like, really cool.
Yeah, then it would be interesting if you tried it in the real world, you know, in the real.
Well, I'm not. I'm more conservative than you are, where that is regarding, because I won't try it until I've proven to myself repeatedly that I can do it. Once I've proven that I can do it repeatedly, because I have to believe it, right? I have to believe it when I go in there, and that's an entirely different situation. It's really easy when you're sitting at your computer looking at a computer monitor. You're not having to deal with the human factor, with the other people around the table trying to intimidate you and you know, play mind games with you and all that kind of thing. You're just playing with a computer.
Yeah.
Different thing entirely. So, no, I want to make sure I've got it before I try it in a casino.
And it's true what you said, that you kept the feeling component going as well.
Yes.
Super
important. Yeah, yeah. In fact, I had a big silly grin on my face as I'm playing.
Oh, my goodness. That's great. That's a good win.
Yeah.
That's a very good win.
Yeah, it is a good win. And it's a nice story, too. That makes it even more fun. And it ties in with what we're talking about, because we're still talking about the book, The Astonishing Power of Emotions. What was I doing? I was using the power of emotions. I mean, what more could you ask for, right?
Yes. We're actually on chapter 8, believe it or not.
Yeah, we're moving right along. Chapter 8 is entitled, Your Life Flows in a Natural Cycle. So, okay, are you reading or am I?
Well, you could take the first part and I'll take the second part.
Okay, that sounds good. So it says, we like the analogy of you in your canoe on the river because it points out the futility of trying to paddle against the current. When you remember that you are source energy, that you came into this body from source, and that now in this body you are giving birth to leading edge desires, which source then becomes and calls you toward, you understand the real river of life. And then you understand the futility of trying to paddle upstream against this current. Actually, I think I already understood the futility of paddling upstream, but I get their point.
Yeah.
If you will consider these important ideas and integrate them into your thinking until they become the cornerstone of that which you are, you will then be able to get on with what you intended when you came forth into this body. You will then be able to live the joyous life experience that you came forth to live. And then it has some bullet points. Number one, before your birth, from your perspective of source, you set forth the thought of coming forth into this physical body. Number two, from your source perspective, you gave birth to the idea or thought of you. Number three, the law of attraction responded to that idea and called forth the manifestation of you. Fourth, now in this body, you give birth to expanded ideas of your life. Fifth, the law of attraction now responds to those ideas and calls them forth into manifestation. Sixth, now from an existing perspective, another thought is given. Seventh, the law of attraction responds to that thought, and momentum is created. Eighth, and that momentum, caused by the law of attraction's response to thought, is the current of life. As you consciously accept the eternal nature of your being, the idea of never-ending expansion is an easy concept to follow. As you consciously accept that you are an eternally expanding being, then living life in this fantastically diverse physical environment, where new ideas are continually born, makes perfect sense. As you understand that you are an eternal being at the same time that you are physically focused here, you begin to see the process of creation in an even clearer way. And when you remember that the inner being part of you always responds to the expanded idea that your physical life has given birth to, you begin to get a sense of the momentum of this stream. And finally, when you understand that the law of attraction is responding to that furthermost idea with the same energy that creates worlds, you then get a further sense of the momentum of the stream. It is from our broad view of the laws of the universe and your important place within it that we can clearly remind you that everything that you want is downstream in this glorious current of creation. And when you relax into the inevitable well-being that is your true legacy, you then begin to live life in the way that you had intended before your physical birth. That downstream, that's what I was in when I was playing poker.
Yes. Until and it felt easy, right? It felt good. It felt easy.
Until I started to micromanage, and then I was going upstream.
Then you turn your canoe around, yes.
Yeah.
You started going upstream.
And I had to let go once again. Boy, do we get a lot of practice at letting go.
Yes. And sometimes people say, well, that means I don't have to do anything. Like, if there's something I want to manifest, I don't have to take any action. As long as I'm downstream and everything seems easy, then that means I don't have to do anything. So what would you say to that?
I think there's a lot of confusion about what doing is.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is there are two fundamental kinds of doing, aren't there? There's action doing, and then there's doing mm-hmm. in terms of I have intention, I'm focusing, I am keeping my thoughts where I want to be. It's a different kind of doing. It's not like getting up and, you know, mowing the lawn. It's a mental kind of doing. So there's the physical doing and there's the mental doing. And what happens, I think, is that when it comes to handling the mental kind of doing, so many of us want to replace it with physical doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. It's the replacing it part. We can't replace the mental doing with physical doing. Now, does that mean that we shouldn't do physical things? No. Actually, that's one of the reasons we came here. We came here to do things physically. So, and in addition, if we're doing something physically as an adjunct, as an addition to having originally done the mental part, then we're encouraging it, we're feeding it, we're living in it, in the energy of it. So in that sense, there's nothing really wrong. In fact, it's actually a good thing to focus on and do the physical part as well. The only problem comes, I think, when we replace mental with physical, when we replace mental activity with physical activity, because that's when we tend to go wrong. What do you mm-hmm. think?
Well, I always tell people, too, because I know Abraham you know, Esther Hicks, who channels Abraham, always says, well, you could just be sitting in your living room. If you're in the right vibration about something you want to manifest, it'll manifest for you. And so then people take that as, well, I don't have to take any action. And I always say, well, if you're really in a high vibration about something you want to manifest and you're really excited about it, that causes action. And to me, that's fine and that's wonderful. You know, that causes us to take action towards trying to help it manifest.
I think also the people who want to just sit there in their armchairs and attract things, there is with those people a little recognized piece of, what do I want to call it, disallowing going on.
Because
what they're really saying is, universe, I won't let you deliver anything to me unless I'm doing nothing about it. That's the attitude behind it, you know? And that's a form of disallowing. That's a form of resistance. So we like to pretend that we're in that armchair not resisting, but there's actually a piece of us that's actually resisting. You know what I mean?
But I just know from my experience, when there's something I want to manifest and I'm really excited about it and I get into that high vibration and in my vortex and all that kind of thing, I feel inspired, like, ooh, what can I do to help as well? You know, I'm keeping my vibration in the right place. And as a result, I kind of feel motivated to take some kind of action about whatever it is.
Well, exactly. You know? I mean, the point of action isn't to have the action solve problems. The point of action is to enjoy the action. To enjoy that you're doing it.
Yes, and the point is, when you come from action, from a high vibration, it feels downstream.
Yes.
It does not feel upstream. And that's, I think that's a big difference, too.
It's a very big
difference.
You're
really in a high vibration about something you want to manifest, and then you take whatever action to help it manifest, and you're coming from that high vibration. It feels good. It feels downstream.
It
and
does.
I think that's the big difference of that compared to, you know, I got to work hard for everything I want. And I'm like, you know, that's a whole different place you're coming from.
And that's usually the place we end up in, that, oh, God, I'm working so hard. I have to work so hard. Nose to the grindstone. That's the one we usually go to first when we want to be, you know, I want to take action rather than actually getting myself into the right mental place, into the mental space of belief and acceptance. We want the action to replace that, and that never works.
Yeah, so I think that's the difference, is that when you are coming from a high vibration about something, you're taking action feels easy and good and exciting compared to when you're the opposite, when it feels like a drag and a dread.
Now, there are people, I should state, there are people who do work very, very hard, who do succeed. But there's a very key point here that we can't skip over when we mention that, which is that the people who succeed after working hard, very, very hard, also are people who tend to get themselves into the right state of mind. They may not do it deliberately with intention, but they always get themselves into the right state of mind. And the interesting thing is, very often they say it's the hard work that got them there. But it really wasn't. It was really the state of mind that got them there. The hard work, so-called, actually dovetailed very nicely with their state of mind. That hard work they enjoyed. In fact, if you read the biographies and so forth of the people who are hard work, you know, hard-driving, A-type personalities who just go after and go after and go after it, you don't find too many of them who say, I really hate this work. There
That's
aren't
true.
Many of those at
That's
all.
True.
They're mostly, I loved it. I wanted to go in for the kill. They loved that. They lived for it. That was so exciting to them. Their mindset
That's
was
right.
perfectly in alignment. Not saying not saying that everybody has to be somebody who has the mindset of going in for the kill in order to succeed. That's not what we're saying at all. It's just that they had a positive view. They had a view that they loved, that they felt good about, that they preferred. And that's what made it work for them.
Yes, and it was so exciting whenever it was clicked, or whenever they got that big sale, or whatever it was.
Right.
They're in that place of excitement about it.
And this is one of the things.
Vibration.
It is a very high vibration. And this is one of the things that really confused me for the longest period of time. Because I've read self-help stuff, you know, practically since I can remember. And so often, so much of what I read just didn't jive inside, but I didn't understand why. I now understand why. It's because they were written by personalities that didn't come close to matching my personality. And so what they were doing, while the steps they took were very successful for them, they were steps that their own personality would take. It matched them as human beings, so to speak. You know, the activities, the mindsets, and so forth. It was dovetailed perfectly to who they were as individuals. But who they were had nothing to do with who I was. Who I was was actually quite different from who they were in many, many ways. And so, and it's almost like they led me to believe that, well, this meant there was something lacking in me. There was something wrong with me. And I believed it. Sadly, I'm sorry to say, I actually believed them. And through my belief in that, in their evaluation that there was something wrong with me, something lacking in me, I ended up developing a mental attitude of lack.
Which is
really kind of unfortunate. But the good news is that after I discovered how LOA works and started to learn how to apply it, I began to realize what the differences were. The difference is that it isn't about your action specifically, nor is it about inaction. It's about your mindset. And once I understood that it was about mindset, then action works perfectly, or non-action
Your mindset controls what?
Because my mindset controls everything. Yep. My mindset controls everything that happens in my life. And
it
controls your
guidance system is controlling how
that's
you
right.
feel.
Yeah, and I had no idea about that. That's the thing that amazed me. None of the gurus seem to know that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Yes, I do.
I mean, there are a few of them who seem to know it, but they didn't teach it. I mean, like Tony Robbins didn't really directly teach that. He implied it, for instance, with a lot of what he said, but he didn't actively teach it. Well, that's not true. He sometimes taught it. But most of the time, he was teaching these techniques and so forth. And it's not the techniques.
Right.
It's the mindset. You know, if he had spent more time talking about the mindset, I would have said, I get it. Or, you know, Zig Ziglar or any of these others. I mean, Zig Ziglar, for instance, was more of the religious side of the whole thing, right? And, well, that gave him three strikes as far as I was concerned anyway, so I didn't spend a whole lot of time paying attention to him. For him, it was about the mindset, but the mindset was a religious mindset. It had to be that particular approach. And that also doesn't work. It isn't about one particular person's approach. That's the key thing. The mindset is the mindset. The only thing that the mindset has to be is positive and in tune with what you prefer. And that's it. And what you prefer can be different from what your neighbor has in mind. It can be different from what the guru has in mind. It can be different from what you, David, have in mind. My mindset, my preferences can be different from yours.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter. That part is irrelevant. The only thing that matters is my mindset in alignment with what I prefer?
And if it is, what does that mean?
Then I'm going to be successful. Then I'm going to have the life that I want.
And it feels downstream. It feels downstream.
And it's downstream. It is completely downstream. Yeah. So
downstream is where everything we want is.
That's right. So if it's downstream, does that mean that I'm sitting back and doing nothing? Not necessarily.
No.
I mean, I could decide to do that, but actually that sounds rather boring to me.
But that's what I'm saying. When you get some people don't get in the beginning. Like when you get excited and you're in the high vibration about something, you get motivated to take action towards it.
Yes.
And it feels good. And that's, like I said earlier, then that's a whole different place. Coming from that place feels good and downstream compared to when you have this, the reverse of that. Like you feel like, oh, the pressure and the working hard and all that kind of thing.
Well, the next part of the chapter talks about the downstream part. So you want to read that part?
Sure. So we are at Just Let Go.
Yep.
Okay, this section is called Just Let Go of the Oars. Most people continually try to calculate the distance from where they are to where they want to be. Quote, how much farther do I have to travel? How much more do I need to do? How much more weight do I need to lose? How much more money do I need? And this is primarily because in your physical format, you tend to be action-oriented. That's interesting because we were just talking about that.
That's right, yeah.
We would like you to understand, however, that as you begin to approach your world in terms of vibration rather than action, and in terms of thought rather than in terms of time and space and distance, your ability to close the gap between where you are and where you want to be will be much more efficient. Sometimes, even when we are offering analogies such as this one about you and your canoe in the stream, you want to apply your usual action-oriented tendencies. In other words, often our physical friends accept our premise that what they want is downstream, so they want to get pointed in that right direction, and then they want to hurry downstream. How can I get downstream to things that I desire faster? I'll focus better. I'll try harder. I'll work longer. But we want you to understand that those determined attitudes only cause you to again turn upstream. Once you are pointed downstream in this current of life, it is not necessary to put a motor on your boat in an attempt to make it go faster. The current will carry you. Just let go of the oars.
Yes, I want to interrupt there and say that's the point I was trying to make about the distinction between trying to use action as a replacement for your thought process or as an adjunct to it. I mean, they're trying to really separate it by saying, well, you don't have to do the action entirely. And that's true. You really don't. The thought process is what's really the thing that matters. And it is also true that our actions can actually interfere with what we're thinking about, what we're trying to do through the thought process. I think that's what they're alluding to in this section here. What you and I were talking about is more along the lines of, okay, we've done what it takes to let the canoe start floating downstream, and then we take actions that we enjoy in the process, such as perhaps paddling with it. Like, this is fun. Let's go downstream even faster. This is great. I'm enjoying this. Or maybe it's, the action is more subtle than that. Maybe it's more subdued in the sense of, wow, it's gorgeous. This weather is beautiful. And the water is moving faster. This is great. I'm loving this. I'm jumping up and down in the boat because I'm really excited. You know, well, it's an action. It's just not an action that leads to us paddling upstream.
Yes, but it's true, because people do get – I can see how they would get that. Like, okay, well, I have to go downstream. Oh, well, I'll focus better. I'll try harder. I'll work longer. But all that is doing is starting to turn you around.
That's
going
right.
Upstream.
And they say so in the last two paragraphs. Those last two paragraphs say exactly that. Why don't you read that?
Sure. So just let go of the oars, and then it goes on. When you are no longer paddling against the current, when you release your oars and relax into your own natural well-being, the current, which is ever moving in the direction of that which you have become and that all that you want, it will carry you towards your desires. The belief that there is something to overcome automatically points you upstream. Understanding that all you desire is easily attainable by you automatically points you downstream. And once you understand that, you are practicing the art of allowing your natural well-being to flow to you and you to it. And that is the art of allowing yourself to be the you that life has caused you to become.
I love the first sentence of that last paragraph. The belief that there is something to overcome automatically points you upstream.
Yes.
That's what they meant by the action. The action to overcome something. It's not about overcoming. As much as I want to. And I am still an overcomer. I still try to overcome, and each time it defeats me. I was trying to overcome when I was trying to make the poker hands come out a certain way. I had to overcome this, right? No. It's not overcoming. It's allowing. It's letting go. And the letting go is it's certainly the hardest part of the process, I think. It's letting go of the resistance is what we're really doing.
Yeah.
We don't think of it as resistance. We think we're letting go of, trying to overcome. We're trying to defeat, trying to beat it off or whatever it is. But it's actually letting go of resistance. One thing I just want to tell you a quick story. One thing that I discovered this week, I think it was in the last couple of days, actually. I've heard this before, but let me tell you anyway. I found myself in a place where I started to do a gratitude and forgiveness routine. And I found myself forgiving myself for all the things that I'd done to get in my own way. I found myself forgiving family members for past, trials and tribulations. I found myself forgiving other people in my past. I found myself being grateful to those same people and being grateful to myself. And each time that I found myself forgiving or being grateful to these people who I had previously had grudges against or, bad experiences, whatever, I found myself going back to myself afterward and doing the same thing with myself. So I would forgive someone, and oh, by the way, I forgive myself. And I'd be grateful for someone. Oh, and by the way, I'm also grateful for myself. It was the latter part that really surprised me, that I kept going back to it, because I actually started to feel better. I could feel resistance going away by being more accepting and loving of myself while I was being more accepting and loving of others. And we forget about that. We tend, don't we do this? We tend to think just in terms of how we accept or love or in some way forgive or just appreciate somebody else. We forget about doing the same thing for ourselves. That's what I discovered. I also have to do it for myself at the same time that I do it about them. Because when I do it for myself, as far as my, when I do both at the same time, that's when I could physically feel the resistance just flowing away, the relaxation happening like they're talking about in the book.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Now, how did you discover to do that, to forgive yourself?
I don't know how I did it.
Did it just naturally...
I think it happened when I was waking up one morning. I think it was Friday morning, perhaps. I can't remember which day it was. But I was just kind of in that daydream state, you know?
Yeah.
And while I was in that daydream state, I just kind of found myself going there. I suspect I was guided, but I couldn't say that for sure.
Yeah.
Just the fact that I wasn't deliberately, consciously thinking about this stuff, that suggests I was being guided in some way. But it, I don't really know how I did it. I just kind of did it.
Well, it felt downstream. It was natural. I'm sure.
It did feel downstream, yeah. And it's just like they said. Where is it? I'm not seeing the thing. There was one particular part where it talked about how the allowing feels, and I'm not seeing it. Oh, yeah, here it is. And once you understand that you are practicing the art of allowing, your natural well-being will flow to you and you to it. That was the feeling. That's what cued in my mind that little story, because as I did that little exercise I described, I could feel the well-being flowing to me and me to it, both at the same time.
Mm. Wow, wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, very cool stuff.
And it kind of reminds us of that well-being is always there. It's always there for us to connect to, always.
And it's reassuring to me to know that I'm actually getting there, because I've been working on this for about 10 years now, and there was the longest time where I didn't feel like I was making any progress at all. Apparently I was. I just wasn't aware of it, because I'm finally getting there.
Right, little bits at a time.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's been quite a journey, and the journey continues, that's for sure. Even today, I've been doing the mirror work that I've been doing for the last couple of weeks now.
Oh, yeah. How's that going?
It's going pretty well. It's still a little bit hard to do at times. I can't say it's gotten really, really easy, but it's a lot easier than it used to be. And I was saying during the week that I have noticed not so much that the negative self-talk, which is why I was doing it in the first place, you know, to remind people I was doing it because Jack Canfield had said he had done it for like 30 to 40 days in his life, and during that 30 to 40 day period, he found his negative self-talk disappeared. And when somebody as eminent as Jack Canfield says that, I sit up and pay attention. So even though I didn't like the idea of talking to myself and saying I love you to myself in my own reflection in the mirror, I figured, well, if that helps get rid of the negative self-talk, I'm willing to give it a shot. So that's why I've been doing it for the last few weeks. And I can't say that the self-talk has disappeared yet. Now, let's see, how long have I been doing it? It's been, this is day 21.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
So I'm moving right along. But while the self-talk hasn't gone away yet, it has faded. And that's what I mentioned a few times during the week. The volume is turned down, and it's getting softer. So,
which is wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So if the volume before was at an 8, now it's at a 2.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's still there. Yes. And it still, you know, crops up, but just not as often.
And I mean, and you're not done with it. You still have another 9-10 days. So
that's just a day 30. I think Cindy was the one who told me about it. And at first she said it was 30 days, and then later she thought it was 40. She couldn't remember for sure. So I figured 30 is the minimum. So I figure I got another 19 days to go, which means I'm a little over halfway there.
So are you gonna keep going after 30, or are you gonna do 30?
I intend to. In fact, I'm hoping, what is it they say, 21 days or 30 days or something like that, and it becomes a habit?
It's a habit.
It's not quite a habit, but it's close. Because when I normally do it first thing in the morning. Like, well, first thing I do is feed the cats because they insist on it. But after I feed the cats, then I do the mirror work. and that's my normal thing. But on a few days where I kind of forgot, I'd get like halfway through the day and I'd feel it. So that tells me the habit's starting to kick in. I'm noticing when I'm skipping it, right? And so I would immediately get up and do it and make sure I had my day's mirror work done. But it's becoming more of a habit. It's not there yet, but it's close.
No, I didn't know you have cats. What kind of cats and how many did you have?
Oh, we have two black cats. One's named Joy, one's named Harmony. And Joy found us back when we lived in Virginia in the summer of 2013. So they've been with us for about 5 years now, not quite 5 years. They lived across the street, actually. And we didn't know it, but the people across the street got evicted from their home. And when they got evicted, they left the cats behind. In fact, they left four cats behind. We ended up temporarily adopting four cats, despite the fact that our lease with the landlord said we were to have no animals at all. This was a little uncomfortable, let me tell you. But it was, you know, it was coming in on winter by the time we got, found all four of them. And, of course, we weren't going to let that, anything happen there. So, you know, we took care of them, and it was kind of crazy because two of the cats didn't get along with the other two cats. So, apparently,
that
there was.
That makes for a little bit of a difficult situation.
It does. Well, apparently, there was a lot of fighting for food supply because we estimate they were on their own for about a month. So they were living rough for about a month.
And
if you're used to getting fed all the time, that can be pretty tough, you know. So,
were they adults or were they kittens? Or?
They're all adults. As it turned out, there were two males and two females. We thought it was one male and three females. We thought Joy was a female, but Joy turned out to be a male. And it turned out that the two males were fighting each other to try to drive the others off. So the two black cats were like one family, if you will, and the other two were two gray cats. They were Yoda. We called them Yoda and Lady. And Yoda was a really, really big one. He was like a big gray cat, but a very nice cat when he wasn't fighting the other two. Just a big cat, big strong cat, and you know, easy to take care of himself and so forth. Well, he was constantly trying to drive the black cats away, and Joy didn't take too much kindness to that, so he would fight back.
So
we had to keep him separate for quite some time. Well, when it came for us to leave, we were actually planning to move that same year because Louise had said, "I want to move back to Connecticut." And we ended up doing it that January. So the really rough part was that we had to turn two of those cats over to the shelter, which was really, really, really rough. The good news is that within 3 or 4 months, with some intervention by Louise reaching out to friends, both of those cats ended up getting adopted. So they now have good homes.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yes, good.
And the reason we didn't take all four is that the new place we moved to, again, we were renting, and again, they had a limit. They had a limit of two cats, so we could only bring two with us. So it was a little heartrending. But yes.
But just the fact that you found homes for the other two is fantastic.
It is fantastic, yeah. The only, I won't say it's a bad part, the only kind of negative part of the story is that the second cat, Harmony, when we found her, all four of them were pretty much emaciated, but those two were really emaciated. Joy and Harmony were. And Harmony was born with a deformed paw, so she was at a disadvantage anyway. And when I first saw her, I mean, she couldn't have weighed more than 3 or 4 pounds. She was a full grown cat, but she was completely emaciated. Today, because I kind of said, well, I'm not going to let this happen to you. We're going to take care of you. I'll make sure of it myself. So today, I can't hardly go anywhere in the house without Harmony chasing me around. She follows me everywhere. I go into the bathroom. She follows me into the bathroom. And it's constantly, you know, give me this, give me that, give me this, give me that. So there's a little bit of a downside there. But
well, and now she's been very well fed.
Oh, she is nowhere near the emaciated cat she used to be. She is actually a little on the plump side. But, yeah.
So everyone in your household is very well fed.
Very well fed, that's right.
Louise, make sure that you're very well fed.
Absolutely, yes.
Did you have any high vibration meals this past week to report that made you feel like, woo, wow, this is amazing, or not so much?
Did I have any high vibration meals? Probably. I don't remember for sure. You always ask me this, and I forgot to try to, you know, remember something like that before doing the show today. Obviously, I was still editing the book at the time. But you ask me these things, and every time you ask me, I always think to myself, you're asking the wrong person. Louise is the person you should ask. Because literally, you can ask Louise not just what we had for dinner last week, but she'll tell you what we had for dinner 5 years ago when we went on vacation. I mean, she associates food with events in our lives. And so, and then the funny part is she'll ask me what we have, you know, last Thursday. And I won't have any idea, and I'll give her like this blank look, and she'll say, oh, yeah, that's right, we had steak. And I think to myself, why'd you ask me? We all know you're the one who remembers food, not me. Oh, well. So that's why I always think it's kind of funny whenever you ask me, what I have. I don't remember half the time. I know it was good. Oh, there was actually one thing. It wasn't.
Yeah,
it wasn't.
There's that one thing you're like, oh my God, yes, that was a 10.
Well, this one wasn't a 10. It was more like a 2. But Louise did something on Friday that she's never done before. She bought TV dinners. She has never, ever. We've done that. We've been together now for, let's see, what's it, 18 years? No, more than that. 19 years.
Yeah.
And we had never done TV dinners. And she bought them, and we got them down, got them out of the oven, sat down to eat. She took two bites and said, well, we're never doing this again.
Oh, my goodness. We did a kind with the little, like, the little trays divided, like the vegetables in one little compartment, and then the food, the main.
No, no, it was an all-in-one thing. It was one of the Boston Chicken ones. And I have to say, Boston Chicken needs to work on their TV dinners because their chicken does not taste at all like chicken. It doesn't even come close. I'm not sure where it is, but it had the texture of pork. I can tell you that much. But it definitely did not taste like chicken.
Oh my goodness! Well, let's hope it was chicken and not some mystery.
I hope so. You never really know.
Well, so much for that plan.
How about you? Did you? You're the one who always has the vibration raising foods. What did you have this week?
I'm trying because this week was a little bit different because of the storm and that whole thing. I'm trying to think. There was something in particular that was like, wow, that was amazing. I can't really remember anything. Isn't that unusual for me?
That's very unusual. Have you taken your temperature? What's wrong with you?
But I had nice food all week, but there wasn't anything that I could think of that was like, wow, I got to tell Walt about this dish.
Well, there will be one for next week, I'm sure.
This is a new week coming up, and hopefully we'll have something to report next time.
You're probably still working through all of the food that defrosted while the power was out, you know?
Yeah, yes. So, are we going to continue to chapter 9?
Yeah, let's do that. We got a few minutes here. We can get started.
So this one is called The Law of Attraction Needs No Practice.
Mm-hmm.
There are three powerful universal laws that are of value for you to understand if you wish to guide your life deliberately. And the law of allowing is the last of these. It would seem logical that we would talk of the first law, then the second, and finally the third. And we have done exactly that in previous books. We are, however, emphasizing this third important law because it is really the law that you have come here in this time and space intending to master. This is the law that you must practice if you are to become the deliberate creator that you came forth to be. The first law, the law of attraction, is not something that you need to practice or even something that you can practice, for it is a law, that exists in every particle of the universe. And it just is.
I also want to add that the law of attraction is the easiest to understand because everybody knows how to understand, you know, this is what I want. Okay, I've just asked for it. Everybody gets that part really easy.
All right, so here we go. Just as your earthly law of gravity requires no practice but just consistently responds to all matter in a consistent way, neither does a law of attraction need practice. You do not have gravity instructors teaching how to avoid falling up because falling up instead of down is not an option or a problem.
We will be doing a seminar today on how to fall up. This is a long practice technique. No, it just sounds ludicrous saying
it. Anti-gravity chamber.
That's right.
And in like manner, you will not need to practice in order to cause the powerful law of attraction to respond to you in a consistent way, for it will bring things to you that match your vibration, and it will do so even in your ignorance of the law. The second of these three powerful universal laws is the law of deliberate creation. By deliberately directing your attention and thoughts toward the outcome that you desire, you can be or do or have anything that you choose. The application of this powerful law has resulted in the manifestation of this magnificent planet upon which you live, and in everything that you are able to see. And in the same way that the non-physical source energy applied this law, and through powerful focus created this environment that you call life on planet Earth, you are continuing to process the process of creation from your physical vantage point.
This is a key thing in here. What we call the law of attraction actually is what we usually mean by it is what is actually called the law of creation or law of deliberate creation, because that's where we do the asking. Law of attraction actually has nothing to do with asking. It's just vibration. Similar vibration attracts similar vibration. But we forget about that.
Yeah.
It's actually the creation law that we're using when we say, well, I want to attract this or I want to attract that. That's the law of deliberate creation. Yes. Yeah. Also interesting that they mentioned in here, the application of this powerful law has resulted in the manifestation of this magnificent planet upon which you live. Wow. And in fact, the idea is one that it is a continuously evolving and continuously developing manifestation. It's not like it's static and fixed and it's done. It happens continuously. In fact,
all the time.
We're doing it. We are actually part of keeping it the way it is. That's the part I'm still trying to get my head around. Like, for instance, my favorite thing is to pick up this green pen, because that's what's always next to me when we're doing these podcasts. I pick up this green pen and I look at it and I say to myself, by holding and looking at this pen, I am helping to make it a pen. And my mind just boggles when I say that. Because it sounds ridiculous, doesn't it?
Right.
It sounds absolutely ridiculous to say that. But literally, that's what's implied. That's what's implied in quantum physics. That's what's implied in law of attraction teaching. That's what's implied in most of the best metaphysical teaching. And it's just mind-blowing. You know, there's a part of me that says, well, what would happen if I stopped thinking of this as a pen?
What would happen?
And the answer is, I don't know. You know why? The reason I say I don't know is because I can't stop thinking of it as a pen. I've tried. I try to think of it as a book, but I look at it and I'm instantly seeing it as a pen. How do you make it look like a book? I haven't figured that out yet. I mean, I know in theory what I should do is imagine it to be a book, but there's too much disbelief inside saying, no, it's not a book, it's a pen. I have so much belief attached to this, and it's mind-boggling to think that belief is what sustains it as a pen.
Well, we have to call it something. So
I don't care what we call it.
I don't
care what we call it. The question is, how does it stay as a pen-like shape? And it stays that way because we keep saying so. I mean, that just blows my mind. There is the idea that there's no such thing except what we say it is in the universe. There is no such thing except what we say it is there. That's mind-blowing. It means there is no objective reality. This pen, as much as it feels to me that it is objectively real, really isn't. I still marvel at that. Like that sounds insane. Even as I say that sounds insane, doesn't it? And yet, I know it has to be true. There was a long time where I didn't think it was. There was a long time where I thought that objectively real things were objectively real. Until I finally came to understand that quantum physics doesn't actually agree with that. Because, among other things, quantum physics can show that there is a single particle, such as an electron, that could be in two places at once. And as long as that's the case, then I know that my belief in this objectivity is really just a belief. I mean, there's nothing wrong with belief, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying it's not objectively true by and of itself. Because clearly, a one particle can't be in two places at the same time if there's objective reality. That's what turned it around for me.
Interesting. See, there you go with the scientific.
Yeah, I mean, you make fun of me for that scientific side. But I'll tell you what, that scientific side has served me well. Well, I know you don't, but... But you always go right past it, too. Okay, let's just do it. I mean, let's stop messing around. Let's just do it. That's the David way, and it's a good way.
Now, do I have time to go to the...
Yeah, we got about 5 minutes left, so go ahead.
All right, so let me just read. Living the law of allowing. And while the first two laws are of extreme importance and your awareness of them is of great value to you and to all that is, your understanding and application of this third law, the law of allowing, is really where all of your personal power lies. The law of attraction says, quote, the essence of that which is like unto itself is drawn. And what that means is, if I feel unappreciated because of circumstances that have recently occurred in my experience, the law of attraction cannot now surround me with people who appreciate me. That would defy the law of attraction. If I feel fat and unhappy about the way my body looks and feels, I cannot discover the process or state of mind that is necessary to achieve a good-feeling, good-looking body. That would defy the law of attraction. Now, that's huge, because so many people that want to lose weight, that are, you know, overweight, that want to lose weight, it's very hard for them to get into a feeling good place about it.
Yeah, I see it a lot on the Facebook groups about law of attraction. Inevitably, every day or two, you'll see somebody posting something like, oh, I everything's going wrong in my life. I'm not so sure about this Alloway thing, and I feel miserable. And you know, everything's going wrong. I lost my job. My lover hates me. My health is deteriorating. You know, I don't understand how I'm supposed to do any allowing in all this. I don't understand. Actually, in most cases, they don't even say the word allowing. They don't even know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And as you read it, you say to yourself, "Well, look what you're saying."
Yeah.
It's right there. You're the one who's saying it. It's right in front of you. It's just amazing how easily we can ignore the evidence that's at the end of the tip of our noses. It's just right there, and we're saying it.
Saying here, you can't achieve a good feeling and good looking body if you're not in the vibration of it. So if you continue to feel unhappy about the way your body looks, then how do you expect to get into the vibration of actually losing weight and improving your look?
And what is it that people do? They say, "Well, I feel miserable about my body. I don't understand how to change that."
That's right.
Come on, guys. Get with the program.
But it's like once you know about the law of attraction, you know that you have to get into that good feeling place about your body to get to the place that you want to be.
Well, that's why I say this is like such a key concept. This is the concept that I wish the gurus of old had really nailed and didn't.
Mm-hmm.
That it's the mindset that makes the difference. That mindset is everything. And
even with, like, it goes on about finance. If I feel discouraged about my financial situation, it cannot improve.
Yeah, there's a big one.
That's a big one. Improvement in the face of discouragement would defy the law of attraction. I mean, that's huge.
So one of the worst things we can do is keep complaining about the fact that we're poor.
Yes, because that will keep you there.
The act of complaining about it prevents you from achieving any wealth. The act of complaining that you're poor prevents you from achieving wealth. That is so important.
And the act of complaining that you're fat keeps you fat.
Yes. Keeps you from being thin.
That's like such a big thing to kind of click with, whether it's being heavy or not enough money. You can't be in the vibration of the not enough and that I'm too fat to get to the place where you can lose weight or attract more money.
And the next paragraph really lays out a number of different ways that we trip ourselves up.
Yes, if I am angry because people have been taking advantage of me, lying to me, dishonoring me, and even defacing my property, no action that I can take can stop those unpleasant things from happening, for that would defy the law of attraction.
I want to draw a connection here, too. If I am angry, then no action can take place. That's the proviso. It's not like action never has any role, but it can't play a role when you're angry. It can't work to your benefit to take action when you're angry. So if you're angry or depressed or frustrated or feeling any of the other negative emotions and you take action from that place, the only thing that can come out of it is more stuff to feel depressed, angry, lonely, fearful about, no matter what it is. It is the only possible result. It is impossible to get a result where you get a much better result because you felt angry. It doesn't work. No one ever produces a better result by being angry. No one ever produces a better result by being fearful. No one ever produces a better result by being depressed. It never happens. And you would think we would notice that. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you think that we would notice that eventually? I'm astonished that I never noticed it. I had to read it in a book before I finally said, "Oh, yeah, duh."
No, when you read these words, so it just makes you realize so clearly that's right. How can I expect to attract more money if I'm feeling discouraged about money? How can I expect to lose weight if I'm feeling like I'm not liking how my body looks? And how can I expect people to like me if I'm angry? Like, it's just so interesting. When you just read it so clearly, it's like, it really makes so much sense.
Take action, or I'm sorry, take attraction out of it. Take law of attraction out of it. And just say to yourself, if I feel poor and I focus on how poor I am, how am I going to make more money? Don't even think about law of attraction. Just think about that thought and the desire. How are you going to do that? That's not possible. Yeah. There is no way to do. The only way you can possibly make any more money is to start believing you can make more money so you can take the right steps in that direction. Because if all of your motivations lead to steps that say, I feel more poor, well, guess what? You're going to continue to.
And unfortunately, we're out of time. But no, I was going to say, if anybody would like to consider Law of Attraction coaching, which is amazing, you can go to lifecoachdavid.com and you can contact me through there, or you can just email me at david@lifecoachdavid.com and we can talk about setting up. I always offer a free mini session for anyone who's interested.
So, sounds great. David, it's been a pleasure as usual. Yeah. Let's do it again next week.
Okay, well, looking forward to it. Have a great one.
I will do the same, and we hope that you all come back next time as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.